Hey, college football fans. This podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to bring you college football's finest. The 2010 Rose Bowl game presented by Citi. This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast. It's Monday, December 7th. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com. And to my left is not Gene Wojciechowski.
No, it's Pat Forty, Gene's better-looking, more intelligent colleague. How are you doing, Ivan?
I think you're better-looking and more intelligent than me, too.
Both of you guys.
Yes, both of us. Mm-hmm. Gene's got plane issues today, couldn't be with us, but Pat nobly stepping in. And December 7th, Pat, it's two days after the 1 second that will live in infamy.
Yes, it is.
Yes, in Dallas. But before we get to that, let's just go straight to our top five.
Five, four, three, two, one. Ivan and Gene's top five of the week.
You like that?
That's good.
Yeah,
very nice.
All right.
Bells, whistles. Very
kudos to Jay. He's been taking grief from Gino all year, so glad somebody likes it. Okay, I'm going to get my top five first, and I'm very proud that I, a week ago, dumped Alabama out of number one and stuck Florida in there.
Good timing.
Thank you. Alabama number one, and after much soul-searching and continued knee-jerk reaction to what happens, but this is over the last 2 weeks, not just Saturday night, I took Texas out of number two. I'd rather see Alabama-TCU, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama-TCU, Texas, Cincinnati four, and then I did put Florida five ahead of Boise and felt badly about it.
You know, I hate to sound repetitious, but I have the exact same top five.
Yeah.
I put TCU ahead of Texas after Thanksgiving weekend.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Because I thought that Texas looked very vulnerable against a Texas A&M team that I didn't think was that great.
Right.
And TCU has done nothing wrong all season. I mean, all they have done is completely dominate their schedule. They've got some good road victories. The Mountain West Conference was good on the top half this year. So I didn't mind putting them second. Texas more deserving than ever to drop down to third, after, you know, the as you said, the 1 second that will live in infamy and a very narrow, very fortunate escape, against Nebraska. And then I have Cincinnati four and I put Florida five. I waffled back and forth whether to put Florida or Boise State there. But you know, I have to say, as great a season as Boise had, they just haven't played great competition.
No, not since the first week. Right. And, I was thrilled for them and for John Junker and the Fiesta Bowl that he took Boise to play TCU, but we'll get to the bowls in a few minutes. Let's go to three up and three down.
Three up, three down.
All right, that's me, right?
Yeah,
I'm in the three up chair.
Yeah,
okay.
You're in the three
All
up
right,
there.
Good. Everybody says I'm too negative. Now I get to be positive. So here we go. My three up, I got to start with Alabama. Talk about big ups to them. I mean, that was a huge performance. We were there Saturday in the Georgia Dome, and it's been a long time, I think, since I've seen a team that totally locked in, ready, game plan prepared, focused, and then all the extra effort plays. You know, they won every collision.
Yes.
They were knocking Florida guys backwards all game. They mastered the half inch, you know, tight roping the sideline several different times.
Yeah.
Greg McElroy steps up and plays brilliantly. Defense was overpowering as usual. I thought that was a command performance by Alabama there.
You know, I remember thinking in the fourth quarter of the game last year when Florida dominated that there were a couple of key penalties Alabama had. I think there was a face mask, and it's the kind of penalty that a kid gets when he's just not quite in position and he's mm-hmm. still trying to make the play and he's reaching. And I thought that Florida's penalties were like that Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, that they were just not quite where they needed to be or just not quite making the play they need to make. And that's what happens when a team is on and you're not.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah. I thought that by far the more prepared and locked in team looked to be Alabama. Number two, my three up, I've got Dominican Sue, whose stock, as you know, I mean, this wide open Heisman campaign has just, I thought, rose meteorically with his play against Texas. 4.5 sacks 10 tackles, six tackles for loss. I mean, it was an unbelievable performance by a guy. And I honestly, you know what? I sent him a Heisman ballot last night, and he's number one on it.
Atta baby.
You know what? And I sat there and I looked at it. You can, you know how it is. When you email it, you put them in and you press send, but then it gives you another chance to edit. And I was like, yeah. God, am I really going to do this? Am I going to vote for defensive tackle? Yes, I am. And I sent the thing.
See, I put him third. Yeah. And debated on second and third, but
yeah, you know, there was plenty of debate on the Heisman, that's for sure, and we can get to that if you want later.
But, yeah, we will.
And then my number three on the three up, I have Cincinnati, which you know, vaulted ahead of TCU and really was the last team standing there waiting for Texas to go ahead and finish blowing that game against Nebraska, and they didn't do it. And Brian Kelly had the great quote last night on the Sugar Bowl teleconference where he said that the Nebraska kickoff specialist is not on Cincinnati's Christmas card list.
Ouch.
Yeah, after he shanked that kickoff out of bounds and gave Texas the chance for the short field for the field goal. But Cincinnati did everything it needed to do, went 12-0. Great comeback to beat Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh. Got a little bit of luck on their own from a special team snafu by Pittsburgh, but an excellent season by Cincinnati.
Okay, down here, over here on the carping side of the desk, I'm sorry. Congratulations to Texas, and I think Texas-Alabama will be a great game, but just the last series of events, you have to put Texas on a three down.
Absolutely.
I don't even know how to explain what turned me off so much, but I think it was as much to do with how they reacted afterwards and the way that Mac just didn't come out and say, Mac Brown, the head coach, come out and say, you know, we just screwed that up and we were lucky to win.
When
that
glossed it over.
Because they did from start to finish. You know, he said he tried to call timeout and it was too loud, which... Yeah, how many coaches have we seen run out on the field to call a timeout?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not buying that one.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So, and Colt McCoy, I'm a Colt McCoy. I'm in the Colt McCoy fan club. He's a great kid. He's an extremely talented quarterback. He's got to take charge there if he's not getting direction from the sideline.
He's a fifth-year senior, and you know what he almost did? It was the equivalent of in the Final Four, you're down 1 point, and you dribble out the clock. You don't even take a shot. That's basically what he did on that last play by waiting and waiting and waiting and finally throwing the ball out of bounds only when he got rushed. If he didn't get rushed, he probably runs out of time.
I know.
I was shocked at that.
Yeah, the quarterback pressure that cost Nebraska the Big 12
championship.
Texas did not fare well there. Second, the ACC, kind of an ugly series of events with the ACC and the bowls, but centered on the Gator Bowl's decision to take Florida State.
Yeah.
There are the rule in the ACC is that you may vary from the standings by one victory in order to take a team you'd rather have. Well, Florida State is 6-6. The Gator Bowl passed over four teams that have 8 or 9 wins in order to take Bobby Bowden. And I think it's a brilliant move. I can't wait to see Bobby Bowden farewell against West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
However, the ACC members are torqued off at the Gator Bowl.
Right.
There was a lot of discussion of what to do about it. And the Gator Bowl basically said, listen, our contract is ending this year, you know, what are you going to do about it? We need this game. It'll be a great game. Mm-hmm. Get over it. And that was basically their attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, the bowl's a little bit messy.
Yeah.
And third, Florida, not just because they were not as ready to play, but just a tough weekend all around. Tim Tebow's regular season finale ends in tears.
Yep.
Urban Meyer ends up in the hospital Sunday morning, dehydrated, which is as an example of how focused these guys get. You know, they forget to drink. Perhaps they should. Well, never mind. let's go. I'm going to let that joke go. Let's go to the soapbox.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. This is the soapbox.
Pat, I'm sure as a loyal listener to the Monday podcast, you know what this is. We each get up and spout something. And my point that I want to make is simply what a great night Saturday was. And because of, you know, you and I go to the game that we think is going to be the best game.
Yeah.
We saw the best performance, but we saw the worst game.
Oh, no doubt about it.
You know,
the whole day.
Of the whole day, but of the major conference championship games. Great game for the Big East between mm-hmm. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. Great game. That's a one-point game, as we pointed out. No, Texas-Nebraska, 1 point. Georgia Tech and Clemson, did I read no punts? I think there were no punts
right?
in that game.
Wow.
And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but it was still a 39-34 game decided mm-hmm. in the last few seconds or minute and change. So, and there was something about the way the games unfolded that made me love college football. I think it's a combination of the unpredictability of 20 and 21-year-olds, the goofiness of the format, you know, which
right.
it's, I know it drives everybody crazy, but the drama and excitement of Saturday, I think, was fun and great and everything that makes me like the sport.
Yeah, no, it really was. It was a lot of fun. And actually, too, if you go back and look at the other two games that decided automatic BCS bids, Iowa-Ohio State overtime field goal by a backup 26-year-old former soccer player kicker.
Yes.
For Ohio State. And Oregon-Oregon State, a great game Thursday
night.
You know,
I have to totally spaced on that, but
yeah.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, there were, out of the six games that decided things, there were five classic games, and then there was the one that we saw, which had the number one and number two teams.
And yet, even that, you know, a tremendous atmosphere, but I we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So anyway.
Yes.
Viva la college football.
All right. And then I'm going to get on the soapbox and kill the BCS. I know it's very original, but look, you know what? I mean, I just look at this and I see TCU sitting there without a chance to prove whether or not it's as good as Texas, without
yes.
a chance to prove, and I look at Cincinnati in the same boat, and I look at Boise State in the same boat, and I'm not here to say that Texas doesn't necessarily deserve its spot, but what I would love to see is, you know, when you have a season like this with five undefeated teams, there's only one way to know for sure, and that's to have them play each other.
Yeah.
By golly, we're not going to have that. And I know in one way I like Boise State, TCU playing each other, but in another way I don't, because it kind of deprives them of the chance to show what they haven't been given the chance to do already, which is to play a quote-unquote big boy on a neutral field, you know, whether it would be TCU playing Florida in the Sugar Bowl or playing, you know, somebody else. I would have liked to have seen those matchups. So,
I like what John Junker did with the Fiesta Bowl. He took Boise in part because they beat Oregon. He wanted the team that beat the Pac-10 champion, which
sure.
I liked.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And he's got a great game, I think. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, there's two undefeated teams. It's going to be an unbelievable defense against an unbelievable offense. That'll be a lot of fun to cover. But as usual, I sit here on the day after BCS Selection Sunday saying, gosh, this deal could be so much better if we'd just do it differently.
You know, I am not a playoff guy.
Right. It's your only flaw that I've been able to see.
Yeah, thank you. That made me speechless. I might tear up. I have a feeling not quite as vehement as I was about Auburn in mm-hmm. 04 mm-hmm. and USC in 03. But I still feel like something this year is really askew. The problem was, you know, in 03 you wanted them to tweak the system, which they did, and it got better.
Yeah.
This year, I don't know what to do. You know, there's no way you can fit five teams onto two sidelines, and there never will be. You
right.
know, so
no, you can't. You can't unless you have a playoff.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's go to burning question.
No need to put out the fire. These are this week's burning questions.
Well, we can't really discuss did the BCS get it right because we have done that. But I would let's talk burning question about the Heisman. Because you put out a great headline out there with Sue as your number one. Who else was on your ballot?
I put Toby Gerhart number two, and I put Kellen Moore number three. I looked at this and looked at this and looked at this, and I feel bad leaving off Mark Ingram, very bad leaving off Mark Ingram. feel bad leaving off C.J. Spiller, feel bad leaving off McCoy and Tebow. I think there were seven guys that I went down to the wire looking at, and I said all along that there was going to be a lot of weight on the last weekend. Maybe I overweighed it. I don't know, but it's how sometimes you have a signature play, a Heisman signature play that you remember how a guy won a Heisman?
Sure.
Colt McCoy's signature play was losing the Heisman, I think, with that just brain dead gap. And he played a bad game overall anyway, and I saw him play.
Totally his own fault.
No, you're right. But I saw him play a bad game against Oklahoma, too. They won that game basically in spite of McCoy. So, I had to take him out. Tebow, look, he's the best leader I've ever seen and one of the most remarkable college football players I've ever seen. But this year, I didn't think he lived up to Heisman standards compared to the competition.
No, I don't either. And I didn't think he played all that great Saturday.
No, he didn't.
And I wrote that, and I got, a couple of indignant emails. But, there were some drop passes, but I think he threw into coverage.
Yeah.
He seemed a little bit off. Never quite got it. Alabama, Nick Saban.
Yeah.
You give Nick Saban 12 months to plan for
plan obsessively, yes.
Yeah. But my ballot, I put Toby Gerhart number one. Simply, I thought he had the best season.
I agree. Well, and Sue, I agree with you, though.
Yeah. And certainly the most consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing I've grown to like with Heisman candidates is the ability to do it every week. Because inevitably you have one bad game.
Right.
I did put Ingram second. I really struggled with it. Because I loved what Sue did.
Mm-hmm.
I put Sue third, and again, couldn't figure out, really struggled with Kellen Moore.
Yeah.
Tebow, I didn't have as. I felt the same way about Tebow. McCoy, it was also. Those were kind of the five guys I looked at the most closely. Gino emailed me yesterday, and his ballot was Gerhart, Case Keenum.
Really?
Sue. Yeah. And
wow.
He just said if you look at Keenum's numbers, they won 10 games, his numbers were out of this world. Had no defense to help him. I think it's a defendable, defensible position.
It is, and he did have a great season, and Houston had a great season. But, I look at them and I see Texas Tech in terms of, nobody was going to vote for Graham Harrell, I don't think, last year, but it's similar where you're just going to put up Star Wars numbers because that's what you do is you simply just throw the ball every down, basically. You throw a lot of short passes and allow other guys to gain yardage, but that's not
the Andre Ware argument.
Yeah, not to discredit Keenum, who did have a great season. But to me, you've been voting on the Heisman probably longer than I have. I've been voting since the early '90s, and I thought this was the most difficult year I've had to try to weed it out and figure out who I really liked.
Yeah, it was a difficult year, and that's what makes it fun. When was the last time we went into next Saturday night? In Manhattan at the theater and didn't know who was going to win.
Absolutely. Oh, I think it's going to be great TV for ESPN for one thing. I can't wait to see who gets invited. How many people go and who they are.
And what's interesting, a little bit of bookkeeping, this is the first year they've, and I don't know whether it's permanent, but the deadline has always been this Wednesday.
Yeah, right.
And they pushed it back to today at 5 p.m. And I was getting phone calls yesterday.
Same here.
Yeah, from the Heisman people. You haven't voted yet, which I've never gotten before. So, maybe they feel as if they need more time, or maybe they saw this race and decided they need more time. But anyway, it's going to be exciting, and that will be Saturday night on ESPN, I believe, at 8 p.m. Eastern. So let's go, Jay, to Game of the Week.
The game. Touchback left at the 20, 15, 10. Runs into the end zone. Nobody near him.
Weak.
Fade pass right side of the end zone. He's got it. Touchdown.
We've never figured out who scored that either. Guy did not do a very good job.
Jay Berwanger
scored that. That's right. That was Graham McNamee on the mic. There's only one game of the week this week, obviously Army-Navy in Philadelphia Saturday. I'll be covering it. I've never covered Army-Navy. I'm very exciting.
Awesome.
And we're not going to talk about it. we are going to pick the bowl matchups that we like the most. I'll go first. I mean, I we've talked about TCU and Boise. We will talk. having slammed Texas, both of us, I still think Texas-Alabama is a great ball game.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited to see it. Yeah. I know what happened the last time Texas went to Pasadena as an underdog.
Exactly. My favorite stat in looking this up, Texas and Alabama have played 8 times. Texas is 7-0-1.
Wow.
The last 4 games, which were bowl games, Texas, the lower-ranked team in all 4.
Really?
3 wins and a tie. So
that's got to be Alabama's worst record against anybody.
I probably is because, Bryant never beat Notre mm-hmm. Dame, but then Alabama had beat Notre Dame in the 80s. So that's a good question and probably should have been in my story. Thanks a lot. Now I feel bad. The other game I do love, despite the political problems it caused, I love West Virginia, Florida State. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a great way to send out Bobby Bowden. And, other than that, there's not a lot that leaps out at me. I like the idea of SC and Boston College. In the Emerald Bowl, my worry is that SC will not show up because they didn't show up against Arizona, and their fans didn't show up against Arizona. And this game's not even in LA; it's in San Francisco.
Didn't you come into the year thinking that you would see USC in the Emerald Bowl and Oklahoma in the Sun Bowl? Didn't you have that?
Yes, I did. I did have that. Thank you for pointing that out. Actually, I believe I had SC in the championship game there, Pat.
Okay.
So it's a little awkward moment. I like Auburn Northwestern.
Yeah,
in the Outback.
I do too.
It will be interesting to see Gus Malzahn's offense against a team that hasn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that game will be interesting. I think Stanford, Oklahoma,
yep.
in the Sun Bowl, a great, as you were saying earlier, it's a great offense against a great defense.
Yeah.
So what do you like?
I am excited about the Fiesta Bowl. Sugar Bowl is going to be fascinating to me from a couple of standpoints. First of all, is Brian Kelly still the coach at Cincinnati,
or is he
playing out the string while going somewhere else?
Yeah.
Is Charlie Strong still the coach, at the defensive coordinator at Florida, or has he already gone to Louisville?
Is he trying to juggle both jobs, and can he do it?
That may be the case for both of them. I mean, if I were Brian Kelly, and so I'm going to get the Notre Dame job, which I'm not sure he is going to by any stretch at this point, but if he does, I would want to finish an undefeated season with my team. And then can you do that? Can you wear both hats all the way through into early January?
Let me point out a couple of things. Mark Richt was a classic case of a guy who couldn't do it 9 years ago mm-hmm. when he was trying to be Florida State's offensive coordinator and Georgia's head coach, and Oklahoma just skewered Florida State in that championship game. And yet last year, Dan Mullen did a great job
at
Florida,
and again
against Oklahoma.
You know, it's interesting. When Nick Saban was going to the Dolphins but coached that bowl game against Iowa, I had some LSU officials tell me, never again will we do that. Said it was way too chaotic and difficult, and the whole staff was divided, who's staying, who's going, but there was no concentration on the bowl game at all. And then the other game... The other thing I want to see about that is whether Florida pulls an Alabama from last year and is so psychologically beaten down and feeling like their season's over that they don't show up. I have a feeling it's Tebow's last game. He'll be there. We'll see whether anybody else is there in mind and spirit.
And they have Alabama as a cautionary tale.
Yeah, they sure do.
To beat the team over the head with.
Yeah. Definitely. And then the Rose Bowl, to me, I think will be interesting. Oregon has been a really interesting story. You did such a great job on that behind-the-scenes deal with Chip Kelly at the beginning of the year, and to watch them from then to now.
Oh, wow.
It's just been incredible. And then to see if they can finish it off against a really good defense. That offense against that defense of Ohio State, that'll be fun to watch.
And it's great to see a team in the Rose Bowl that hasn't been there in a while because LA will be excited
as excited as
LA gets, but the atmosphere around the Rose Bowl that day will just be electric.
Absolutely.
Because Ohio State hasn't been there.
Exactly. Jim Tressel's first Rose Bowl. He was so excited when they won. He's like, I'm going to the Rose Bowl.
That's just amazing. Mm-hmm. So there is nothing. There's nothing like walking around the Rose Bowl the morning of January 1st.
Oh, yeah.
Blue sky.
I agree.
Perfect weather.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to Sports Writing 201.
Sports Writing 201.
I want to thank Gene for voicing that over, by the way. It's kind of how he...
That's about how fast he types,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about today, and I wanted to ask you this, Pat, because of your love of multiple sports, your favorite event to cover.
Wow, that is it's such a hard question because I do love the bowl games and especially the Rose Bowl or the BCS Championship game in Pasadena at that setting. I love the Final Four. But I think I'd probably have to say the Kentucky Derby.
I was going to say that you were leaving something out there.
Yeah, I'm going with the Kentucky Derby just for the intense 2-minute rush that that race is. You build up all day. You know, it's just, you know, it's
all week.
Yeah, right. It's a big party. And then the day of the race, you know, you got 20 horses that have been culled down from a field of maybe, you know, 35,000 yearlings 3 years earlier. And you boil it down and you get the 20 best in there, hopefully the best. And then it's a 2-minute race. I mean, there's no time for regrouping. There's no halftime adjustments. You know, there's nothing. The gate's open, and if you're screwed up, you're screwed up. You're done.
Yeah.
And it's just, and when they come down the stretch and there's 150,000 people screaming, it is a great, great, sensory experience. That's for sure. And inevitably, whoever hits the wire, I said, who's that? I didn't pick them.
The ritual tearing of the ticket.
Yeah.
you know, I saw one derby. I've never covered it.
Mm-hmm.
2006 Barbaro, which was, you know, it's almost a melancholy memory at this point, but you're exactly right. It was just such a thrill.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I wanted to ask this question was that I thought, despite the game itself, that the SEC championship game, there's a Freudian slip, the SEC championship game was just a magnificent event.
Absolutely.
The Georgia Dome is the perfect venue for it.
Yeah, it's great.
The sight lines are good for 75,000 people. It's a great press box for us because it's open, it's low, relatively low.
Mm-hmm.
And the absolutely split crowd through the end zone, through the end zones. Somebody's yelling on every play. Now, is that my favorite event? Probably not, but I loved it Saturday. I just thought it was magnificent. I think what the SEC has done, you know, Roy Kramer just perusing the rule book, 20 years ago and figuring out that they could expand and you know, look at what God hath wrought. You know, it's an incredible event. Is it, you know, it's probably not my favorite. The Rose Bowl is on that short list, the Masters.
Yeah.
But I would probably have to go with the BCS Championship game because you get the same split crowd and minus the swells who manage to show up at these events. But they've done a good job of making it somewhat Super Bowl like.
Yeah.
With the buildup of the week and descending upon a city. And you have the tradition of the bowls that's wrapped up into it, so that that would be, I think that would be it.
Can I tell you a quick sports writing 201 story?
Absolutely, we love those.
Well, this is the behind the scenes stuff that happens where our job is just so darn glamorous.
Yes.
I come out of the Georgia Dome after writing my story, and I told you I want to go back to my hotel room to see the end of Texas-Nebraska. It's just the start of the fourth quarter, so I'm going to rush. And I'm parked on the other side of Centennial Olympic Park, so I'm going to hustle over there. And there's Pete Karasotis of Florida Today wandering around in a daze outside, has no idea where he's parked his car. He didn't have a parking pass, as neither did I, has no idea. So he ends up walking with me, said, okay, we'll shortcut through the park, and we'll get in my car, and I'll drive you around. There's one way into the Olympic Park, and they've closed all the other exits and entrances. We have to climb the fence to get out of the park, find my car, and then drove around for a half an hour looking for his car. He had no idea. The only way I knew what happened in Texas, Nebraska was checking my BlackBerry.
Oh, God.
I said, Texas just wanted to go to the national championship game. Pete's like, oh, I don't know where my car is. Yeah, thanks. All right.
I find the Georgia Dome impossible to get out of.
Yeah,
every year I get lost coming out of the Georgia Dome. There are no signs.
Right.
Mark Blouchin and I, Mark Blouchin of the Boston Globe rode with me. I said, let's try this way. We're going to get lost. And neither one of us saw any signs. Yeah. We drove around downtown, finally circled back into downtown because I knew I could get there from downtown. It's glamorous, folks.
It is.
So, for the bereft and lost Pat Forty, who's off to watch a replay of the Texas-Nebraska game, this is Ivan Maisel. This has been the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Thanks for downloading.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com. Hey, college football fans. This podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to present the 2010 Citi BCS National Championship Game.